You're listening to In Focus on 107.7 The Wolf. I'm John Damschroeder, and my guest today is Dennis Hetzel, the retired president and executive director of the Ohio Newspaper Association. Dennis knows newspapers from the bottom up, holding every job in the organization at some point in his career, reporting, editing, and holding the publisher's position with small family-owned papers and with large national chains. We're talking to Dennis as Toledo's dominant regional newspaper, The Blade, goes to three-day-a-week publishing, trying to move readers to the online version of the paper that does update daily. Across the highway in Cleveland, the Plain Dealer has announced another round of layoffs in the newsroom, driven by declining revenue. Down south in Columbus, the Dispatch is now printed in Indianapolis, meaning deadlines are early and the paper misses late-breaking news. So, Dennis, can a newspaper still be a vital institution in a community when the economic forces have hollowed them out like this?
Thanks for having me, John. And the answer is yes, maybe it depends. It's a more nuanced situation than that, and it sounds Pollyanna-ish what I'm going to say, but it's really true. A lot of smaller market papers, particularly in communities that are viable economically, are hanging in there pretty darn well. They're profitable, they're making money, they still have lots of local news in their pages. They know there's a transition coming to digital. If it hasn't come already, they're trying to stay on top of it. The large metro papers are the ones that are really struggling because, in part, they've been so dependent on major advertisers as the primary portion of their revenue stream, particularly since classified advertising. I'm sure everybody remembers the days when you could hardly carry the Sunday newspaper. It was so heavy in places like Toledo and Cleveland. You know, that's gone away. And why has that gone away? It's because the major advertisers are being buffeted by the same market forces that newspapers have been buffeted by. You know, the car dealers have consolidated, and they're spending more and more of their money on other types of advertising. Sears, a major advertiser like Sears, has just disappeared. So when a store like Sears or H.H. Gregg, which went out of business last year and was in a lot of Ohio markets, that was probably, and I'm making up these numbers, I want to caution everybody, I wouldn't be surprised to learn that some of these companies were million-dollar accounts, you know, for the local newspaper. So all of a sudden you got a million-dollar hole. So a lot of what's going on with the metros is an effort to buy time, to figure out business models that are going to work. The journalists are sort of ahead of the business people in figuring out strategies, and it's almost like a race to make sure that by the time there are some answers emerging on revenue to support local journalism, that the papers will not have had to cut to the point where they're no longer terribly relevant. And it's a huge challenge. There's no question about it.
Well, I didn't mention in the introduction that you have a consulting business now, Fresh Angle Communications. Let's take a look at a Fresh Angle. Give us some ideas that you might have on how newspapers in decline can fight these forces and turn things around.
Well, there is not going to be any magic bullet. There's a macro thing going on at the federal level that I do think is really important and somewhat underreported, although it's underreported because it's kind of inside baseball. But there's an interesting study that went on in which, there is a disconnect between what the readers think is the health of the industry versus what we know is the not-so-good health of the industry as a whole. So at the national level, the News Media Alliance, which is the largest trade association for our industry, has been working with Congress, and there's now bipartisan support for a bill, and I apologize for getting wonky here, but it would essentially curtail antitrust law, which would allow the industry to bargain collectively with the likes of Google and Facebook in order to get a better revenue share for all the traffic they send to Google and Facebook, which is huge. And it would be the functional equivalent of what the TV stations get. Most people aren't aware that the broadcast industry is getting billions from the cable companies for, for letting the cable companies, carry their signals. This has been a huge windfall that, as you know, John, with your background, is a relatively recent phenomena. The cable companies used to not pay anything for it. And that's helping. Bad and political advertising is really what's propping up local television and why they're not yet feeling the pain that the newspaper industry is feeling, because local TV really has some of the same demographic problems. The kids don't feel an urgency to watch the 6 o'clock news any more than they want a rolled up newspaper, in their driveway. So everybody's got a transformed digital. So that's something going on at the national level that I think could help. Locally, papers are just finding a new blend, whether it's event marketing, working more strongly with local advertisers. You're seeing a much stronger prevalence to subscription models, to readers paying a greater share. Traditional newspaper revenue mix was that the readers with their subscriptions or single copy purchases were barely paying for the paper that the newspaper was printed on, and you had 70-80% of your revenue coming from traditional advertisers. And that's no longer ever going to be the case. And it's not going to be the case online either, because the cost of digital advertising is so cheap. So it's going to be subscription models, event marketing, some amount of traditional advertising, sponsored content, which must be clearly labeled ethically, but is still valuable content. It's going to be a whole mix of things that hopefully will get everybody out of the woods eventually. Because I want to add, we need to, take the First Amendment as seriously as the Second Amendment. There's a reason we're the only specific business mentioned that I know of in the Constitution. People want and need good local journalism. It's really important. Otherwise, you've got your neighbors belly aching on Facebook, as your major source of information. And, putting aside all the noise in Washington about fake news and my, 8 years running the News Media Association, working with all Republicans, I just didn't find that antipathy, to local journalism, certainly that we hear about in D.C. and New York. They understand that community, local newspapers are part of the glue of these communities, and something's lost if we don't have it.
One of the things that gives me real foreboding about local newspaper journalism is the fate of the Youngstown Vindicator, which could not attract any buyers, could not keep operating at a loss, and shut down the paper last summer. The name has been purchased, but the old Vindy is
right.
Gone. And the journalism at that paper was first rate. The paper was all over the news and sports of their region with feisty, interesting coverage. They had a news talk show on their website. They had video news. Excellent journalism in an economically declining market didn't prove to be feasible, or shall I say, didn't prove feasible to a family-owned paper without the scale of a large chain or the investor-supplied money of a hedge fund-owned newspaper. Now, if a family-owned newspaper has to self-finance because of the financial risk, and hedge funds have a ready supply of money from pensions, aren't economics going to drive newspapers into the control of financial buyers? And isn't this especially worrisome if we're heading into a recession about now?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and this coronavirus situation is going to be a short-term hit for everybody. And, I can imagine car dealers all over the country right now are telling their newspaper and broadcast advertising partners, you can pull my ads this week because there's nobody coming in. It's going to be a hit. But again, it's got to be nuanced, and all due respect to the family that owned the Vindicator, wonderful people, and I knew them well. If you took a deep dive into some of the things they did and decisions they made, some of the characteristics of the Youngstown market, that's not necessarily apples to apples to what a lot of other, family-owned papers are doing and succeeding at around the country. So again, it's not all black and white. There's a lot of successful stuff going on. And even in Youngstown, as you alluded to, the Warren newspaper has come into Youngstown with his indie name. Now, I think they would be the first to admit they're probably not deploying the resources the Vindicator had. But there's also been a startup whose name is just escaping me right now with foundation money behind it. There's some Google News Initiative money behind it in Youngstown, doing a digital-only product there. In fact, it's being run by a woman named Mandy Jenkins, a really brilliant woman who I worked with at the Cincinnati Enquirer. So, and we're seeing around Ohio a lot of startup operations that are challenging the local media when it slipped in terms of the quantity and quality of what it delivers. There's a guy over in Coshocton named Mark Fortune, who's got a weekly paper, The Beacon, that's competing with the Gannett Gatehouse-owned daily paper there and hanging in there pretty well. Up in Mansfield, there's richlandsource.com, and people come literally from around the country to talk to Jay Allred, the guy running that place, for some of the innovative ideas and the subscription models he's built in Richland County. So there's stuff going on out there that's kind of under the radar, where people are finding ways to make some money. Up in Mansfield, I think Jay probably has as many or more people covering news now as the traditional daily paper does.
You know, in reading your research, where you get into Coshocton and Mansfield and the very successful new journalism models, I was struck by how important the passion of the business founder has been to the success. These are clearly mission-driven enterprises, but what happens when the owner wants to retire? And you've also done some very interesting discovery work on what a problem that is for newspapers, when it's time for a transition. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, when I was in Pennsylvania for 13 years on the New York Daily Record, involved with the Pennsylvania newspapers, you know, I saw pretty much the same thing. And what you have is the same problem that all family businesses have. You get into the second, third, fourth generation, and, you know, some of the kids don't want to do it, and some of them want to sell, some of them want to stick with it. So there's nothing unique about, you know, family businesses trying to figure out what succession looks like. But you're absolutely right. You know, the startups that are popping up around the country are ones that just people, like all successful entrepreneurships, again, there's nothing unique about this, just have a real passion to do this and figure stuff out, and they care deeply about these communities. I wouldn't ultimately be surprised to see, you know, in some markets, you know, some of these more successful startups eventually getting bought up by others, and then whether that will start a cycle of diminishment or help them with greater resources, you know, as they work together, you know, remains to be seen. But there are some signs of hope out there, and again, there are still a lot of markets where the traditional local newspaper and their website are hanging in there. I don't think the business will ever be as profitable as it was back in the day. But again, that also bred a lot of arrogance and a lot of problems that, you know, maybe we brought on ourselves.
Now, in Ohio, the Gannett chain, once darlings on Wall Street, but stock market investors don't like newspapers, and they especially don't like newspapers with debt, has been taken over by Gatehouse, a wholly owned unit of Fortress Investment Group, a private equity fund controlling more than $1 billion in Ohio public pension investments. The business model for this sort of buyer is to take out loans right away on the newspaper and pay themselves a special dividend with the borrowed money. The debt is serviced by laying off staff and other cost cutting. Dennis, for this sort of paper, sort of buyer of a paper, a bad newspaper is actually more profitable to them than a good newspaper, isn't it?
Well, in theory, for the short term, so yeah, you milk it. You know, the ideas, you know, some of the vulture funds, the Denver Post being, you know, the kind of the poster child for that. You know, you milk it for all it's worth, And, you know, and then eventually you just, you've collected all you can out of it and you just let it die. And it should be a concern. And, you know, I'll cite an Ohio example. The parent company of the Denver Post also owns the paper up in Lorraine, which clearly is an utter shadow of its former self. I can be a little blunter about it now that I'm no longer running the News Media Association. I mean, I remember going on a member visit up to Lorraine, and it wasn't just about they don't have as much staff as they used to. I mean, the carpet was threadbare. It was obvious they weren't taking care of their physical plant. I mean, it just was a depressing place to walk into. And, you know, when I ran the association, it's a hard thing to quantify, but, you know, I could walk into a newspaper and tell you in 2 minutes if morale was good, if there was a sense of, hey, I know it's tougher than it used to be, but we're hanging in there together, and we really, you know, believe in doing a good job for this community. And I'm not saying the staff in Lorraine don't want to do a good job for the people in Lorraine, but it just was not a happy place to walk into. And it was very sad, you know, for someone who had so much fun and learned so much in this business during my career. But not every place is like that. As far as Gatehouse and Gannett goes, I want to say something about Gatehouse that, you know, they have a lot of critics, and I know they've cut hard at a lot of their operations, but what I observed in Gatehouse is, in my opinion, they're one of the few companies that really understand that local news is not just big game hunting. You know, if a plane crashes in your community tomorrow, or your team, you know, wins the state high school championship, although that's not going to happen this winter, this spring, every newspaper of any level of quality, unless you're absolutely in the pits, is going to do a great job covering that big breaking news story. You just gear up. It's, you know, you gear up and cover it. It's the diminishment of everyday local news that really concerns me. It's following up on why someone walked out of the jail, or why the school board changed their whole math program and bought books from the, you know, the school superintendent's brother-in-law. I mean, whatever it is, it's that everyday watchdog stuff and just being there that doesn't win Pulitzers, but the people just sort of expect. It's the calendars, you know, when the Rotary Club's meeting, and all these little things that we, you know, we used to do, and we can't do it all, but we still need to do quite a bit of it. Gatehouse is one of the few large companies that kind of gets that it's not just a quality problem, it's a quantity problem. And that when there's no local news on your website, when there's only two local stories in your paper every day, it becomes irrelevant, no matter how good a job you do on the occasional big story that lands. And as I watched the Dispatch the last few years in Columbus, under Gatehouse's ownership, I frankly felt they hung in there pretty damn well in terms of generating, you know, a good quantity of local news and staying on top of things. And they were helped by the weekly papers they own around Columbus. So one of my hopes with the Gatehouse-Gannett merger, now that they're so powerful throughout Ohio, owning so many of the, pretty much, you know, every large paper now except for Cleveland, is that some of that Gatehouse influence will rub off on Gannett, which has really kind of abandoned that idea, in my opinion, having a lot of local news is also important.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about the problems that the newspapers face from digital advertising, Google and Facebook, the loss of classifieds to Craigslist. How important is the loss of upscale readers leaving to subscribe to the online versions of the New York Times or the Washington Post, which, you know, both have added hundreds of journalists and are really making the subscription model work for them? But, you know, I'm getting in-depth national and financial news. I'm not touching that local if I go that route. How important is that?
Well, I think those are completely different animals. I mean, you know, the New York Times and the Post, the Wall Street Journal is another good example. They're able to mine the world for readers. You know, they have a base of millions of people that tend to be a little higher income and better educated who want, you know, good quality, sophisticated reporting. Not that they don't have their issues too, and are willing to pay, you know, a fairly significant amount of money in order to have, you know, full access to that. And that's fine, but that's a different space than the local news space, even in a market, you know, as big as Columbus or Toledo or Cleveland. You have to have compelling, useful, meaningful local content for people in a smaller market. And frankly, that's turning out to be a bigger puzzle to solve, particularly in terms of the business model than it even has been for the Times and the Post. So again, you know, if there's a major story, you know, Gannett/Gatehouse, you know, can deploy a lot of resources into any community, whether it's Cincinnati or Columbus or Akron, you know, to get that covered. It's what are you doing on a sustained everyday basis, you know, to keep that audience there, which the Times and the Post are obviously able to do because they have such big staffs. And, you know, on any given day, you know, getting away from whether the political coverage is biased or not. I mean, if I look at NewYorkTimes.com, based on things I'm interested in, I see more stories that I'm interested in reading than I have time to read, which is pretty cool, really. It suggests they're doing a really good job. Same for the Wall Street Journal. So how do you replicate that at a local level when you're, you know, cutting staff and cutting resources? It's a huge problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, the answers aren't necessarily the same, and the content priorities aren't necessarily going to be the same. One mantra I always had as an editor, and I'm working on a little presentation on this right now, is that, you know, local is not a synonym for parochial. And, you know, one of the things that stunned me occasionally with a few of the publishers I talked to, you know, when I was in the Ohio Association was, you know, we'd be talking about something like immigration, and they'd go, well, you must have illegal immigrants in your community. That'd probably be a pretty interesting story. And they go, well, that's national news. That's not our story. You know, so you can also go so far to the extreme of just having, you know, school lunch menus that, you know, you're missing stories that would really matter to people about why, instead of the school lunch menus, what about the cafeteria worker there who might be an illegal immigrant? What's her story? You have to figure out ways to do both. There's no good answer.
Enterprise journalism, and it brings a mindset of finding those stories. You know, one of the most famous consultants, Dennis, in radio history, a guy named Lee Abrams, the guy behind album-oriented rock that turned FM radio from a wasteland to profit center, is now coming out with a consulting service based on the premise that news and information is the rock and roll of our day. Do you think that's right? Does that sound right to you? And if so, doesn't that create an environment for the successful reinvention of the news business?
Well, it's relevant news. I think I put the word relevant in front of it. Well, because there's certain types of news and information that's just commodity news, and that's the problem TV is going to have. You know, it's sport, and that's why they were all cutting back on sports now, because sports, other than running around with camera crews shooting Friday night football with half-empty football fields, you know, the TV stations realize sports is, they can't win in sports. There's just no way they can win. Weather is commodity news. So, you know, God help us, we need TV in a weather emergency. But other than that, it's a commodity, you know. So
it's a commodity done the way they do it now. I mean, you know, I was hired by a guy at one time who said, essentially, your job is to get me an exclusive story that no one would ever know.
Right.
And I want you to do what comes naturally, which is force unscheduled public accountability sessions on the most powerful people in this community. And it was absolute rating gold, but no one does it.
That's right. And the other point, but the point I was working to is there is a place for curating commodity information in one place. So, and there's probably ways to do that if you look at, community support, artificial intelligence, whatever R&D is needed, which the industry's always been woeful on spending a lot of money on, to become the go-to place for the commodity information in one place, so you can put your journalistic effort at the kind of things you're talking about, and also having just a steady diet of, relevant local news and information. So it's a multi-track approach. And, the readers, I've never met a reader who said, I don't want you to pay any attention to the school board anymore unless you get a tip. No parent would ever say that. And yet somehow we've decided we don't have to pay attention to the school board anymore unless we get a hot tip.
Well, the thing of it is,
of course,
is
you're going to pursue the hot. There's got to be some ways.
The tips don't make sense to you unless you have the context of having been there.
You know, it's like
you need to know the rest of the jigsaw puzzle to make that tip matter.
And so it's easy, right? And it's easy for us to both sit here and bang on local media outlets, but I also have to point out that when I was the editor of the York Daily Record in Pennsylvania, I had over 65 people in my newsroom. Now, some of them were tied up in production, but the New York Daily Record today, which is a Gannett paper with really good people in that newsroom, I still know a lot of them, is down to like 15 people. So we've got to come up with smart strategies to fill that void. But a paper that only has two or three local stories every day is not going to be successful. It's going to be too late by the time the business strategies emerge. That's kind of the podium I've been shouting from.
Final question here. Can you attract young people to an industry that is contracting like that? I mean, when you and I started, everybody seemed to want to be in the media because it was riding high.
Yep.
Now, I'm not sure if I was, I would enter the business. How big a problem do you see that as?
Well, I'm a little more optimistic about that based on my experience at the Ohio News Media Association in that, boy, there are so many bright and caring young people at Ohio's newspapers and their websites right now that it's great. That's a good thing. But keeping those people is a challenge because the bright young people that want to be successful journalists, and especially if they have a lot of digital skills, they're gonna be okay. But whether they're gonna end up being okay for somebody else, unless they have mentors, unless they have support, unless they have a path up, and unless they get paid better. And again, that's also part of the business problem. The pay for young reporters, actually in broadcasting as well as newspapers, is just abysmal in the smaller markets. I mean, it's not a living wage. You'd make more working in an Amazon warehouse, and that's an issue. So I think the keeping them and helping them grow and keeping them in the industry is the bigger challenge. And the industry's got to prove that it's got its act together and is going to offer great opportunities for these bright young people going forward. You know, a story I tell, when I was a young reporter in Little Galesburg, Illinois, and I thought I knew everything, but of course I didn't know even half of what I thought I knew. I was hungry, and I was a good young reporter, I think. My managing editor there had been in the slot, which means, ran the copy desk at the Indianapolis, I think it was the Indianapolis Star, but I know it was in Indianapolis. And my editor had been in the community a long time. So this was a small paper with both an editor and a managing editor with years of experience, really knew the community, and really knew journalism. So that if I turned in some story, I had Jack there to go, hey, Dennis, did you call the sheriff? You might want to call the sheriff before we publish this or whatever, whatever it was. I had support. Today, you have communities where the reporter is working out of his car or on a Starbucks. His editor is two communities or even the next state away. And so there's been a real deterioration in the support network particularly in the smaller towns and communities, to for these young reporters. And photography, great photography, is disappearing as well. So, you know, these are major challenges, and there are places where they're figuring it out, but it's something people should be concerned about.
Dennis Hetzel, retired president and executive director of the Ohio Newspaper Association, currently founder of Fresh Angle Communication. Thanks for giving us your insight on the business challenges driving such big changes in the newspaper world, changes that are going to hit us in Toledo starting next week, changes that are not going to stop and will go way beyond the blade. Your experience helps us understand why. Thanks again.
And help and support your local newspaper. They're really trying.
Amen.
That would be my amen moment. So thanks, John.